through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two with Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We still got a bunch. You know what? This may just turn into a venting day. And if it
let
is,
it out.
If it is, so be it. Yeah, right. Let the people speak.
We're here for you. People are here for you.
It's fine. You know what? I think I got a little bit ahead of the game last night trying to go positive, but that's okay. Let's see who's been waiting the longest here. Chris is in Spanaway. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, you guys. Man, I guess it's easy to blame an individual. It's easy to blame coaching staff. But I'm going to try to take a different route and look at the bigger picture. I've called your show many times, and I've made this point before, but I think it bears repeating. If you would have told me two seasons ago that we were going to move on from the LOB and move on from Marshawn Lynch, but still make the playoffs in each of the following 2 years, I would have said you were crazy. Yet here we are. And I just feel like looking at the bigger picture, we're right on schedule, man. I didn't think we were a Super Bowl team this year, and we overperformed, just as everyone on the show has pretty much agreed. So looking at the bigger picture, the flaws that I saw yesterday are very familiar, and they're hurdles that I have seen John and Pete overcome before, so I trust in that.
Sorry about that. Here's the thing. How long can you go before you win another championship? Like, this idea that, and I'm guilty of this myself, saying, you know what, this team is making the playoffs. They're winning 10 games. They're winning 11 games. They're winning, you know, whatever it is. They're a successful team that's getting into the playoffs, maybe winning a game, maybe getting to the second round. Unless you demand Super Bowl championship, what we've seen these past couple of years has got to be good enough.
Well, and I'm sorry, but what are people watching where the same team, outside of the New England Patriots, who have had just unprecedented success, Super Bowl success, they're a standalone franchise with what they've been able to do to offset league parity. Otherwise, I mean, the Packers last won in what, 2010? Teams don't just go to the Super Bowl all the time. 31 teams lose every year. And most of the time, it's 31 different teams and a different team wins.
And
well said.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And right now, with how the Seahawks are going and the way that they're building right now, they can be one of those different franchises. When you look at the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks, they're already on their way. The other difference is you look at in recent history, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New Orleans Saints. They were in situations where they had to rebuild, and at best, they went 500 in two seasons in a row.
Good point.
And the New Orleans Saints went 7-9.
Yep.
And they were building towards something. The Seahawks have been able to build towards something and still win games and win it in a way that it just is overcoming the odds. And that's how special this front office has been, this coaching staff, also Russell Wilson, you have to point to in a major way for overcoming all of that. And you look at the way that this is set up in 2020, I said it before the season, I said it a little bit during the season, but this is going to be a fascinating watch to see how they handle this offseason, because when you talk about, Tom, going from wild card to divisional round and you're barely just getting there, does that satisfy you? No. I want this team to be a preseason Super Bowl contending favorite. They've got the talent. They've got the ability to make it happen legitimately. And this offseason in 2020, they can do it because of the draft capital and the cap space that they have.
Brent is in Wenatchee. Is this the Brent from Wenatchee that works in our office? I guess we'll see. Brent, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am not terribly upset today. I feel semi-happy about the whole show. Really happy with the offense. I am starting to wonder about all the misses, though, that these guys have had, or the Seahawks coaching staff and general manager, all the misses that we've had lately with Malik McDowell. And it feels like L.J. Collier's a miss, Kedrick Thompson, Leno Hill, Ziggy Ansah. I'm concerned with all those misses, and I also wonder, I'm looking at this lineup, with guys like Puna Ford and Jaron Reed and Clowney across the front, the two linebackers that are still great. And on the back end, Griffin, McDougald, and Diggs. How are these guys that bad?
It's a terrific point. Look, that call actually just made me wonder something. If this team didn't have Russell Wilson, would Pete and John and everybody be fired? I mean, he's right. There's been a lot of misses.
Yes.
Too many. Like, if you're another GM and you don't have a quarterback and you miss at the same rate that Pete and John have missed on all these other guys, LJ Collier, Malik McDowell, et cetera, would they still have jobs?
Yeah, but I don't think
they wouldn't.
No, but I think it's unfair to completely separate Russell Wilson's success from Pete Carroll and John Schneider.
But just because you hit one time, it doesn't mean that you're – okay, I need to be careful here because I like Pete and I like John, and it's going to sound like I'm arguing for their dismissal. I'm not. But you need to do better than just hit on one quarterback and coast on that for 10 years.
They have. They've hit on other players, not recently.
I'm not
just blindly defending them. I'm saying that someone who thinks that there aren't 52 other players that matter around a quarterback is mistaken. The quarterback is the most important piece. Look at all the Super Bowl winning franchises and tell me how many of them did not have a franchise caliber quarterback. A handful, but you have to be just stellar in other parts of your team.
Yeah.
But there's important aspects of coaching that go into that. Pete Carroll has done important things for this team. And I just don't know that I agree with the crowd that says Russell Wilson is the only reason.
Well, I mean, how many times, though, did these games this year come down to the play of Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf? I mean, did Pete Carroll even have to coach this team?
Absolutely. But I think that the mistake that they made this year is to get too risky with defense, to think that we can cut corners on defense. We can let someone like Justin Coleman go. And we can coach up the pieces that we have. And I would hope that leaving this season, they've thought, you know what? We actually need more help with personnel.
Well, Jim.
Yeah, they need help both sides, no question.
Jim's in Olympia. Go ahead, Jim. Jimmy.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Good. Hey, I think the Seahawks need to cut their ties with Clowney. He's going to ask for too much money next year. Obviously, the defense is in a rebuild mode. Go through the draft and build yourself up that way. You've got an offense that doesn't need any tinkering with. I mean, obviously, there was some injuries. You need to get some guys back. But defense is what wins you championships. Look at the 49ers. I don't think there's a team that's going to beat the 49ers. I mean, I really don't. That defense is so solid that Jimmy Garoppolo can have a subpar day, and they'll still win at the end of the day.
Thanks for the call, Jim. We haven't really gotten to Clowney today, and there's going to – look, we have a long time in between now and free agency to talk about him. What do you think? What's your gut on that?
My gut
tells me that he doesn't want to come back.
My gut says differently. I know that everybody else has kind of felt that way in his comments that he doesn't want to play for a sorry team, that he wants to play for a Super Bowl contending team. To me, that's Clowney's way of jockeying to the Seahawks and saying, look, I'm not just going to blindly sign back.
Yeah.
I want to see your plan. I want to see Pete and John, if you're going to put a roster together that's going to be Super Bowl contending worthy. If you're just going to stick with the status quo, and I know the guys on this roster, and I see some guys that you think are going to develop that I don't believe in, then no, I'm not going to come here. So I think that that's a little bit of play from Jadeveon Clowney saying, look, I want to be here. I like the Seahawks, but you got to show me something. You got to show me how much that this team is right there in the hunt in 2020. So I don't see him being gone. I think that he's a guy that you need to have back unless you can find a Za'Darius Smith and a Preston Smith like the Green Bay Packers did this offseason in free agency. They hit it right, and the Seahawks, unfortunately, weren't able to put their version of that together properly.
What'd you make of Clowney's comments, Stacey, on that? That he wanted to play for a Super Bowl. See, to me, the Seahawks are a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, well, I saw it as very vague, and I was slightly less, I don't want to say optimistic. I was questioning whether or not he'd be back more after reading that comment.
Okay.
Pete Carroll's comments this morning to Danny, Mike, and Paul made me feel that they're making a clear effort this offseason to bring him back, that he very much matters to this organization. He's a player that they don't want to lose. But I questioned whether or not he would be willing to, or whether, I mean, what if he ends up with a team like Kansas City? What if he feels that there's another team that's just that much closer?
Yeah. Well, don't you think that the money's going to speak at the end, though? I mean, the Seahawks will probably have the money.
I think that there are contenders that are going to be willing to offer him the money he wants.
There. JC's in Port Orchard. What's up, JC?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it.
One of the biggest things that I have issues with is when it comes to Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr., it's making adjustments on the fly. We realized that last week Trey Flowers was getting torched by the receivers, and then this week he also got torched. And so one of my biggest things is after Lazard went out, Green Bay only had one big deep threat, and that was Devontae Adams. And so I don't understand why they didn't take our best cornerback, which is Griffin, and put him on Adams. Regardless of where Adams at on the field, Griffin should have been sticking him the whole entire time. And just those minor adjustments, I think, would have helped because we beat Green Bay statistically in every other category.
JC, appreciate the call, man. Great call. And this is something that we haven't been able to get to yet on our show, but I think that you nailed it on the head in terms of making adjustments and also knowing who can beat you. And I think they did a pretty good job on Aaron Jones in the game. He had a couple big plays, but outside of that, he wasn't a consistent factor.
They did the same thing to him that they did last year. He had a big first half and was gone in the second half.
It was Devontae Adams, and Devontae Adams picking on Trey Flowers, picking on Ugo Amadi. And you've got to find a way to put your best player on their best receiver. And outside of that, they had really nobody that was going to threaten you. And so I think that that is a big coaching blunder on the Seahawks defense.
Greg's in Bainbridge Island. What's up, Greg?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, well, I'm going to vent just for a little bit about the game itself and what could have been done different in my eyes. And then I'll see, you know, talk about the future, which is very important, too. I feel like that our defense let Aaron Rodgers dictate what he did with his offense. And, you know, the timing not being on in our defense is, and also, you know, I'm not really wording it right, but I feel like that we didn't tackle good enough and we didn't execute, like the last guy said, on making changes on the fly to our defense. I don't know, it was disappointing, but overall I feel like that we are a Super Bowl contender, and I would be careful if I was Pete and John on signing him to a large guarantee, and that means Clowney. I feel like he has some medical issues, and you might have to put that in the contract. But otherwise, you do sign Marshawn Lynch, and because I don't think all our running backs are going to be back by the end, by the beginning of next year.
You want to re-sign Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah, heck yeah, I do. Why not? We can get him on the cheap. He's an inspiration to other players in our locker room.
So you're bringing are you bringing him on because you think that he can have an impact on the field, or because of his leadership in the locker
room? Absolutely, both. The locker room and the field. The guy's 33. Look at Frank Gore. I mean,
yeah, but Frank Gore is an outlier, you know? Greg. I mean, you know that.
Well, either that, you know, he still is making an impact, whether it's, you know, 10% or 90%. You know, you pay him what you feel like you believe he can do.
Thanks for the call, Greg. You know, what is it with Seattle and this Marshawn thing and keeping him around and having him, like, provide inspiration to the team? It's reminding me of Ichiro. It's starting to remind me of that, like, this past great who we're keeping around.
We could find a job for him. We'll find a way. The chairman needs a special assistant.
Right. We'll pay him, keep him on the payroll to do something.
In fact, he can still wear a uniform and batting gloves.
It's strange.
It is one of those things where I wonder, and I get your sentiment, Tom. I do wonder about this running back position group.
But Marshawn's not the answer.
He's not the answer to take over. But in terms of when until Chris Carson comes back, until Rashad Penny comes back, and he has an offseason that he's saying he's dedicated to playing, it might be a good solid piece to just have there as a backup situation.
Did he say that yesterday that he wants to play next year with the Seahawks?
I don't think so. I don't think he's saying anything.
No,
Marshawn Lynch.
Marshawn.
I don't think he
said something that he just kind of wait and see sort of thing, but that if he were to come back, it wouldn't need to be as a starter.
That he would need to be.
Needless to say, it would not be. That he would be fine coming back as like a number three guy and more of like a mentor tutoring role.
And so to me, that would make more sense to me if that was that situation. It would be interesting to see the Seahawks go down that road. But hey, I mean, they were very impressed with his attitude and the way that he was in that building this time around. So I would say that it is a possibility.
Scott in Kirkland. What's up, Scott?
Yeah, hi.
What do you got, Scotty?
I think we need to let Norton go. He's a linebackers coach. And we could have the – I don't think it's our personnel. I think it's our schemes. And I called a while ago, and Wyman was on the phone, and he agreed. We don't blitz enough. We don't do anything enough. It don't matter if we had the whole defense was all pro. We still would not be able to get to the quarterback, it seems, just because of our schemes. Russell Wilson gets thrown around all the time every game. We cannot – tackle an immobile quarterback like Jared Goff or anybody hardly ever. So it's our schemes. It's been like this for years. We're figured out. People know what to do against us. Our zone, our coverage is all terrible. It's because of that. I don't think it's the players, really. I think it's our schemes because Norton, we need something new, and we need to let Russell – let him have the ball and do his thing like he did last night. We're holding him back. We need some trick plays. We need some new stuff. But get Norton out of there or go get Gus Bradley.
just wants to overhaul the whole team, I suppose.
Scott, when we're dipping down to we need trick plays, I think we're getting into a very dark place that we should not go into. But
we need more catching
plays.
No,
you need to pick Valore in there.
Yeah. And look, Ken Norton Jr. to me is a guy that I think – there are a lot of things personnel would fix in terms of having a better pass rush, having better D-line that can get to the quarterback, having some help next to Clowney, I think would really be a boost to this team. It would make the scheme look a whole lot better. But you have to look at some of the in-game decisions that they've made, the adjustments that they didn't make. And to me, you look at two years of this defense – not performing to the standard, and not just being a middle of the road defense, but a bottom of the road defense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part that's just not acceptable to me. And sometimes you have to, although it may not all be on Ken Norton Jr., sometimes you have to set the precedent that that's not going to be okay in your program.
If you're if you're better than middle of the road, what are you?
Front of the road.
Front of the road.
You're driving on the road.
You come up with a new phrase.
Yeah.
You're the 2013 Seahawks.
That phrase is incomplete. Our buddy Sean is in the Netherlands. Is he in The Hague? Is that where you are, Sean? Is that what we talked about last week? What do you got?
No, I'm in Maastricht, southern Holland.
Oh, okay. Oh,
southern
Holland.
Holland.
All right.
I have a few things just because I have it in front of me. USA Today, they said the win probability for the Packers went from 87.1% to 87.9% when we decided to punt. So look, I don't think there's the probability says you could do both. They're both bad decisions. And I mean, you got to pick one. It's really about execution. And obviously we didn't execute. And to the second point, I'm surprised I was like 18 years old, and did Ben Roethlisberger get it in the end zone? I don't think so. And I'm surprised with the amount of money that is poured into the sport, gambling, et cetera, that there's not a definitive way. Because also, yeah, the first down of Jimmy Graham, I don't think that was a first down. But there was that touchdown that they scored. How did they decide that that was a touchdown? Also, my third thing, Russell Wilson, I mean, it's crazy. And this is actually the reason I called it in last time. I didn't know I was trying to win a prize. I had no idea. So when I gave me my pick, it was total random.
That's
Tennessee
awesome.
Titans. How'd you like that pick, the Tennessee Titans? Did you love that one?
Not bad, Sean.
Yes.
Not bad at all.
Love it.
Congrats.
But Thursday show on Colin Cowher, he had a guy named Brady Papinga in. And Colin obviously loves Russell Wilson. And Brady said, I strongly disagree. And he said something to the extent that I've never heard of a player who's propped up more than Russell Wilson. Everyone wants to see him be an elite quarterback. And then Colin said, so you don't like Russell Wilson? And he said, no, I love Russell Wilson. I like how humble he is. I like how spiritual he is. And then he said, I just look at him like a function of his surroundings. And then last night I checked on it on his Twitter after the game because I was curious because he carried the whole team, you know. And he said, well, it's time for Russell Wilson to be elite, and we're going to find out right now. And then after the game, he posted, see, I told you, Russell Wilson's not elite because they didn't win the game.
Who was this?
Just like,
Brady Papinga. Okay, I mean, if you watch all these games, and like we said before, usually if they're going to win, it comes down to Russell Wilson being able to take the game under control, make passes to Metcalf and Lockett, move the chains, and end up winning the game. So how can you say that he's a function of his surroundings?
Because people with that opinion have already decided that Russell Wilson
this team doesn't
is
win
not
any games
a top
if
quarterback.
Not for Russell.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Someone like that has already said he's not Tom Brady, and because he's not Tom Brady, he's not a legitimate elite quarterback.
But how does a person, if it's is it Brady Papinga? Like,
yes.
I'm not sure what, is it a he?
Yes, he.
For that person to get into the position that he's in, to be on Colin's show, he's got to know at least a little bit about what he's talking about. How could he possibly hold the opinion that because he's not Tom, because Russell's not Tom Brady, that's the reason why he's not elite?
What?
Like people who have those kinds of opinions,
yeah,
don't get to be on Colin's show
because he's a former linebacker.
It's fascinating to see some of that conversation and to know, and if you follow this team and you know anything about the Seahawks, what has happened and what's transpired in terms of Russell doing all that he can to help this team get into that position. And did you not watch the game, the fact that they were down 21 or 24 to 3 and they're even in this position because of Russell Wilson's effort, right? Like that kind of stuff is comical. But ultimately you look at, it's interesting what Sean said, the probability, right? The probability of 78% to 79% versus punting the ball to the Packers versus Russell going for it on
fourth. So it increased the Packers' likelihood of winning when they punted?
Yes, when they punted by 1%.
Dude, I don't care about any of that crap.
And to me, it still doesn't change my mind either.
No.
Because you're still 3rd and 9 and 3rd and 7 from winning the game. Defensively, you put yourself in the best possible scenario. It's not 3rd and short. It's not 3rd and medium. It's 3rd and long. And it comes down to simple coaching strategic errors that allow Devontae Adams to be one-on-one against your rookie nickel cornerback.
Who you haven't played, so I can't buy that you have a ton of faith because you've chosen to start other guys over
Correct.
Him.
Then also in that situation, you have Lano Hill being the free safety who's not adequately helping Ugo Amadi over the top. Then you got Lano Hill once again, one-on-one, Jimmy Graham, 10 yards off from him, and all he has to do is catch a simple shallow cross, 5 yards, and he gets the first down. Those are coaching errors to me and scheme errors in that situation.
Jacob and Kennewick, you have 30 seconds. Go ahead. 30, 29,
hey, thanks for,
seven.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yep, go ahead.
I just wanted to double down and, you know, it's a down day for a lot of Seahawks fans, but I just wanted to double down on, man, Russell, and just how what he did yesterday and the heroics he played with. I'm just proud of that guy, and I think Seattle as an entire fan base needs to appreciate the greatness that they're watching. You guys have a good rest of the day.
Hey, thanks, Jacob. We appreciate it, and I totally agree with that. We still have full phone lines here, so we're going to try to get back to calls later on. I see Josh, Patrick, Brad, David, and Paul hanging on there. Sorry we didn't get to you here. If you can hang on maybe until later, we'll try and come back maybe around 2:30 or so. Next, it's the halftime show. We have a scandal in baseball and a couple of other wild NFL games. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
What were you guys doing before the Seahawks game yesterday? Were you watching the Chiefs and the Texans?
Went to church earlier in the day, then watched the Chiefs and Texans, and that game turned it on. It was 24-0 Houston. I was like, okay, this is going to be Baltimore, Tennessee all over again.
That was the single weirdest, like not craziest, like twists and turns type games, but just
it was
weirdest
a fast comeback
turn
yeah.
that we've ever seen. Stacy and I and Paul, Paul Gallant, were in here from 10 to noon right before that game started. So by the time I got home, I turned the TV on. It was 14-0 Houston, I think with 9 minutes to go in the first quarter. Now, 14-0, that's a couple of quick scores, but you still think, okay, it's only two scores. Chiefs are at home. They score once, all, but, you know, it's whatever.
Was it crazier? Oh, no, 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 no.
No, I was going to say, but then all of us, then it's, was, is it 24-0 or 24-3?
24-0.
I thought that at that point, Chiefs fans, Chiefs players, Chiefs coaches were just going to give up. And then they just boat raced them. I mean, what happened?
Patrick Mahomes had, what, 5 touchdowns? Is that what he finished with?
Yeah, but the first 3 were all set up within their own, they were already in the red zone, on their own 20, on their own 10. You had turnover after turnover. And the other thing that set it up, I mean, if you're talking about the Houston Texans and you're the Seattle Seahawks and you're Seahawk fans and you're mad at Pete Carroll and all that, just be glad you're not the Houston Texans right now, because think of that, 24-0, and then they decide to go for a fake punt.
Right.
4th-and-3, fake punt in their own territory, and that's what started the entire landslide for the Kansas City Chiefs to make their comeback.
Well, they faked the punt and they kicked a field goal.
It's a coaching failure.
They kicked a field goal at the 10 as opposed to going for it on, I think, like 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-inches. It was those two decisions by Bill O'Brien. Here's a question about that. Can you fire a coach who makes bad decisions in the playoffs but always gets you to the playoffs?
That's a really good question.
Because I guarantee you, in Houston right now, as mad as everybody is about the Astros, they want to do all kinds of bad things to Bill O'Brien.
I agree. And you have the outlook for the offseason. There's not a whole lot of hope because right now Bill O'Brien is the stand-in GM.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have – how many – is there first and second round picks they don't have this year and then the following year after that? So talk about their future and – trying to rebuild this team, it doesn't look too good in Houston right now.
You know, I saw somebody on Twitter yesterday say that if it turned out that it was a Titans-Texans AFC championship, everybody would be mad, the fans would be mad, NFL would be upset. Really? Nobody's going to watch that? It's the NFL, and it's the AFC championship. I don't care if it's the Titans or whoever. People are going to watch these games because it's the NFL. The people who complain the most about the matchups and, oh, I don't want to see the Titans in the Super Bowl. Really? Are you not going to watch because of that?
Well, now you got some crazy storyline with Derrick Henry. 3 straight games of over 180 yards rushing.
He is unreal. Stiff-armed Earl Thomas.
Are you kidding me?
I kept getting updates about that game. So I was in a movie theater when that game was happening. And I kept, it was a war movie. It was very dark.
Is it 1917?
Yes, and it's so good. Phenomenal movie. I can't recommend it enough. But I kept looking down at my phone, kind of hidden underneath my coat, getting some nasty looks. And I wanted to turn to people and be like, you don't understand. Right now, a 6 seed is beating the Baltimore Ravens. So, I need to go back and watch some highlights from that. But Derrick Henry, just once again, it's unreal.
And 2 straight games. 2 mm-hmm. straight games.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill does not throw over 100 yards, and they win.
That's a team that knows who they are.
Crazy.
How many straight games for Henry with 100 yards? 3?
3. 180.
180.
180 yards plus.
I was going to say,
3 straight games.
100 isn't really that much.
No, and he's probably going to get it again because the Kansas City Chiefs, they're not a defensive juggernaut either. So it's going to be an interesting matchup between the Tennessee Titans and Kansas City. And to go to your point, that's not a matchup that I would have predetermined, said, hey, I want to watch this. But because of how the playoffs have gone and the storylines have shaped up, I'm absolutely going to watch that game.
Yeah, how can you not? I mean, look, it'd be fraudulent for me to sit here and say, oh, I love Tennessee all of a sudden and I know all their players. I don't. But, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, he's got to be comeback player of the year, doesn't he?
It's crazy. It's crazy what he's been able to do. You know, just think about that situation. They bench their franchise quarterback in Marcus Mariota. They get a guy who's played a lot in this league in Ryan Tannehill. I think that, that you're going to see a lot of that start to happen for quarterbacks in the National Football League, for them to, or for GMs to put more of a premium on their backup quarterback.
My favorite tweet I saw was the possibility of Ryan Tannehill going to play in Miami in the Super Bowl.
Yes. Yes. That'd be so good.
Chaos.
Dolphins.
Chaos.
Dolphins fans, that'd be a shot to the heart.
Is he going to get himself a contract?
Yeah, I think so. I think
that's such a mistake.
Tennessee will have to, they'll definitely have to make a decision, but I think the sentiment would that you would definitely give him a contract.
Like they Nick Foles him?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big mistake. Niners took care of business in a game where a lot of people were picking the Vikings because I thought the Vikings took out the toughest team in the field, which was the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game would at least be close, but not to be. Niners just dominated that game really from the start and in every single facet. Vikings had their chances in the beginning, but away they went in the second half, 27-10. Niners take care of it, and now they look like the unbeatable team.
Yeah, least exciting game of the playoffs, too, so far.
Yeah, definitely. So they'll be taking on the Green Bay Packers in San Francisco. Green Bay, a team that's really struggled with the 49ers in recent years, even going back to the years with Colin Kaepernick. Talk about a one-man show. Kaepernick, whenever he would play Green Bay, especially in the playoffs, he would just run, I mean, snap the ball to him, he'd run all over the place. Game was over.
And this is another matchup where I look at Green Bay and the 49ers, and I think the 49ers are going to run away with this one, honestly, because you just look at the Packers' offense. They were very unimpressive to me, and now you add a team that has a legitimate pass rush like the 49ers do. Yeah, I think that the Green Bay Packers are going to be in trouble when they go down to when they go to Levi Stadium, because the 49ers are, they're rolling right now, and I think that they're going to be in the Super Bowl with how Kyle Shanahan's coaching that team.
All right, we're going to talk about cheating next, and people who have unclear consciences, and people who are flight risks, and people who are about to get into a lot of trouble. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
You guys know what I don't like in life? I don't like a liar.
Really?
I don't like a liar.
I understand that.
I don't like somebody who's duplicitous, who's deceitful. And it appears that's what the Houston Astros are. And that's what Alex Cora, the current manager of the Red Sox, is, stemming from his days as a bench coach with the Houston Astros. I'm just going to read you this story here. Astros manager A.J. Hinch and general manager Jeff Luhnow have been suspended for 1 year for each of their roles in the team's sign-stealing, according to multiple reports. That came down around 11 o'clock. Later on in the day, the Astros fired both of those guys. A.J. Hinch is now fired. The GM, Jeff Luhnow, is now fired as a result of their role in the team's sign-stealing scandal. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with this story, evidently Alex Cora, when he was a bench coach in Houston, devised a plan to use technology, the replay room, etc., to gain knowledge over the other team's signs, stole them, and then rode that system right onto a World Series championship in 2017. Cora is now with the Red Sox. He's the manager of the team, but it looks like baseball's investigation is cracking down on this whole thing, and Cora could be the next one to be in big, big trouble, like more than just a year suspension.
Yeah, every report coming out says it's going to be a very harsh punishment. So whether that's a ban,
yeah.
I don't know what that would be. Maybe it will be a ban.
That would be
like a lifetime ban, like a Pete Rose ban.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That'd be pretty intense. I mean, the fact if these guys are getting, if Hinch and Luhnow are getting a year suspension, I mean, if Cora, the guy who implemented this whole thing and devised this whole scheme, and if they find evidence that they continued to do this with the Red Sox, I mean, yeah, I would imagine it would be pretty severe, and it wouldn't shock me with how they handled these guys if that ended up being the case.
Can I read you an excerpt here from the investigation?
Mm-hmm.
It says one or more players watched the live feed of the center field camera on the monitor, and after decoding the sign, a player would bang a nearby trash can with a bat to communicate the upcoming pitch type to the batter. Witnesses explained that they initially experimented with communicating sign information by clapping, whistling, or yelling, but that they eventually determined that banging a trash can was the preferred method of communication. Players occasionally also used a massage gun to bang the trash can. Doesn't this seem like it's a huge pain in the you-know-what just to orchestrate the whole thing? Like, even Buster Olney, he has a quote from an Astro player. He says, they did not believe in the sign-stealing scheme was effective, and it was more distracting than useful to hitters. So why? So, I mean, think about that. You're a Major League Baseball player. You're going to be up fourth in the inning, but you're in charge. But you know, you're in charge of stealing signs.
Isn't that what you'd want to say though? If you were part of that team, you wouldn't want to say, "Yeah, I benefited from it." You'd want to say, "No, I mean, if anything, it was a distraction. It was an obstacle for us to overcome."
But I could see how it would be a distraction.
Well, it would definitely be a lot of effort, as you said. I mean, it's a lot of effort to go undertake that. And to have multiple players to do that, you would think that would fall on a coaching staff, that you'd have somebody.
I would
somebody
think it would fall on like a clubby, right? Like some stooge in the clubhouse watching that stuff and relaying it. Not the players.
And here's an example of what it sounds like.
Next pitch. There's the changeup. Bang, bang, takes it.
Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
It's a breakdown.
That's what you call a massage gun banging a garbage can. It's the banging scheme.
Fastball's coming. Here's the other thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, the Astros played in the 2017 World Series against the Dodgers. The final two games were at Dodger Stadium, and there's accusations that they knew what was coming from Yu Darvish. What game was that, Curtis? Game 7?
That was Game 7.
Game 7. There's allegations that they knew what was coming from him. Could they have used the Dodger Stadium replay room the same way they would have used their own room?
I don't think so. But I mean, how would that work? At that point, what if you've already picked up on tendencies or you...
Right. And didn't Darvish pitch in Game 3 in their own building? So maybe they stole the signs there. By the way, I just saw somebody else came out on Twitter. They're accusing the Dodgers and the Yankees of also doing this, but with different methods. So I'm sure we haven't seen the last... I guess, accusations being hurled at Major League Baseball teams. And look, if enough accusations are out there of teams that are successful, the Twins, the Yankees, the Dodgers, teams like that, then yeah, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to believe that this was actually affecting games.
Well, there were a couple instances in the postseason this year where it was Houston home games. James Paxton of the Yankees, here's his quote saying he didn't feel like he was tipping his pitches.
Did you feel like you were tipping your pitches at all tonight?
I don't think so. I don't think that I was. I mean, I'll talk to Larry, of course, and our guys here and find out if anything was going on, but I don't think so.
And so he said that after he got lit up in Minute Maid Park, and if he didn't feel like he was tipping his pitches, then, well, maybe something else was going on there. Steven Strasburg also talked about how he was tipping his pitches. This was Game 6 of the World Series, which he then, after he figured it out, had one of the best starts we've ever seen from anybody.
What was the change you made?
Started shaking my gloves, so they didn't know what I was throwing, so... You know, obviously, look for certain things, and, I just thank Menhart for, giving me the tip.
It's just one pitcher after another that, they've made comments about, Houston picking up on certain little things that they've done during a game.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's too much evidence.
Right. And going back to that quote, Tom, of the player saying that it was more of a distraction than anything else, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've got a few people in here that are very clued in on baseball. Is if that's the case, isn't baseball more of a player-driven thing, more of a player-driven sport than most other sports? That if a player in the major leagues, they don't want to do something or adhere to a certain tip in terms of coaching and all that, they simply don't have to do it?
Yeah.
So if it's that distracting and if it's coming down from management and they don't believe in it, then why are they doing it? Why are they following through on it if it's that distracting to them?
I'm not saying that they are.
Right. I'm just saying that it's interesting to hear that one quote just in sense from if you have Alex Bregman who thinks that it's distracting. You would think that he'd be like, "Nah, we're not doing this."
Well, maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's peer pressure amongst contemporaries.
Maybe. It's just, it's interesting to have that kind of, you know, maybe there is that back and forth. I don't know. But the fact that they were so involved in doing this and that, you know, throughout the entire clubhouse that it was, this is how we do business. It's one of those things that I'm glad that Major League Baseball has come down hard on this and that this is something that is hopefully in the past and not more of the future.
This is a huge moral failing on the part of the people involved, is it not?
Yeah, the fact that it started from the top down. This wasn't, as far as we know, this was something that was condoned by the GM, and your skipper didn't love it, opposed it, but was still a party to it. And I think for that reason, it feels dirtier.
It does feel dirty. I mean, I don't want to sit here and point the finger and say, like, I'm the master of morality, but nobody who was involved in this could have thought to themselves, this is the right thing to be doing.
No, they all...
No, it's against the rules.
They all knew it was against the rules.
Yeah.
They all knew they were you know, going far outside. But I guess when you're in that mode of win at all costs, in which that organization clearly was...
And sign-stealing is a part of baseball culture, so that's all we're doing.
Right, correct. And so you can convince yourself that you're just sign-stealing and that this is, hey, we're just getting one extra advantage into this situation when really they're going way across the line.
We're going to put a bow on last night's game next, 710 ESPN Seattle.